Today our scripture reading begins in Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 through 6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will rise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. The young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense, and they shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Now Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay homage." I probably didn't say that. Is it homage? Homage? Can someone help me on that? When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is shepherd my people, Israel." Who is to shepherd my people, Israel. Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen in its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road.
For those of you who weren't here for our Christmas Eve service, these are some ornaments that Janine Petrie had made. So if you didn't get one at the Christmas Eve service, you're welcome to come up and take one of those to remember her by. So for how many of you was the wise men the favorite Christmas story? Not too many. That's all right. I mean, for me personally, it always seemed a little out of reach for me. Like somehow I didn't quite fit in that story. But let's start here with a little quiz, just to see if you've been paying attention. How many wise men were there in the search? Three. Okay. How many gifts were the wise men carrying? Three. What were they? Okay. Does anyone recall the names of the wise men? This one. Very good.
Ten.
Huh? I'm sorry. We'll get there. Balthazar No, you said Balthazar Melchior or Melchior. Well, the fact of the matter is that none of these little factoids are exactly true. They're, surprise, they're all traditions which have grown up around this story, a story that's told by Matthew alone. And it would seem that Matthew has created these three kings or wise men in effort to emphasize the kingly status that Matthew aligns with Jesus. Well, in reality, these wise men, or magi in Greek, were likely astrologers or mystics or even second or third class Persian priests. Furthermore, Matthew doesn't provide us with an actual number of these nomadic wanderers. So there could have been two, or there could have been 200. In fact, the number of the Magi is most likely tied to the number of gifts that these wanderers, these wayfarers, are depicted as bringing. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh, each of which has their own traditions built upon them. Gold being a symbol of kingship on earth. Frankincense, a symbol of deity or divine status. And myrrh, an oil used for embalming, symbolizing Jesus' death. Even the three names attributed to these Oriental wayfarers are purely fiction and likely added to the narrative somewhere along the way to indicate that Jesus' messianic sphere of influence would reach all people, all nations. And of course, we can't forget these star-struck sojourners' trusty steeds, upon which they are virtually always depicted, right? I mean, have you ever seen a magi astride a horse or a mule? Nor an elephant or an ostrich, right? It's always a camel. Which makes sense because camels had been domesticated for several hundred years by this time, and they were known for their ability to travel long distances and carry heavy, heavy loads. But Matthew doesn't include any camels in his nativity story. Okay, so let's assume, for the sake of tradition, that these mysterious migrants were riding camels. At the same time, I want to draw your attention back to our Isaiah reading for this morning, because he too is waiting and watching for a Messiah. As he proclaims, "Arise, your light has come, a light to which the nations will flock, and a bright dawn to which kings would draw near." Maybe that's where we get the idea of kings. And Isaiah says, "Lift up your eyes to the heavens from which salvation comes, and look around for the abundance of the sea and the wealth of the nations shall come to you." But this is my favorite line. "And a multitude of camels will cover you." Now, I don't know about you, but that's quite a vision that becomes stirred in my mind. Light brown fur as far as the eye can see, all hoofs and humps, and hardly a place to step without soiling one's sandals. But why do camels, at least for Isaiah, point to this restoration of the Jewish people? Maybe Isaiah is imagining camels as bearers of great treasure, returning to the Jewish people the gold and gems that had been looted from the temple during its destruction. Maybe Isaiah was envisioning The many Eastern nations sending a diverse multitude of individuals astride these beasts of burden, coming to celebrate the revival of the nation of Israel. Or maybe Isaiah envisioned these camels not just for their value as livestock, which would have been significant, but the work that they could perform in rebuilding Jerusalem to its once glorious, bright, shining existence. But what's clear is that Isaiah imagined camels as part of the backdrop of his messianic vision, and not just one or two or three, but so many that the Jewish people would be covered in camels. The problem with the three camel tradition, as with the three wise men or even three gifts, is that it's incredibly limiting. When we hear of three kings or three wise men, the image that has been handed down to us is men in ornate royal robes with their extravagant gifts and bejeweled headwear. But outside of a Christmas pageant, with cardboard crowns and hand-me-down housecoat costumes, it's difficult, if not impossible, for us to identify with such eclectic individuals. And if the three gifts they bear must be of immense value, then any gift of lesser value lacks the same importance or impact. Which says to me that if I'm not royalty or a wisdom teacher or even some exotic astrologer, then I don't quite fit in this story. And if a gift must exceed the cost of which the average first century individual could afford, am I left to either come empty-handed or stay at home? All of which suggests that my own place at the manger is limited at best and insufficient at worst. Now, it's no secret that Matthew is writing to a specific audience with the expressed goal of painting Jesus as royalty within a Jewish context. And you don't have to be a biblical scholar to know that Matthew sees Jesus as belonging to the royal lineage of King David. And if only royalty may attend this messianic event, then Emmanuel, God with us, can become quickly out of reach. But if Isaiah's prediction bears any truth, and there are camels enough for all, then maybe Jesus is more accessible than Matthew's story lets on. Perhaps you recall Joan Osborne's 1995 hit, One of Us. Anyone? You'll know it as soon as I give you more of the lyrics. In this song, she ponders the question, what if God was one of us? And not just one of us, but just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus trying to make it home. And when it came out, there were an awful lot of Christians who scoffed at such an idea, writing it off as sacrilege or unchristian or blasphemous. But personally, I think Osborne has something here. And I would say that Osborne presents a much more approachable Jesus, a much more approachable God than even Matthew's gospel. Especially in light of the notion of Emmanuel, God with us, because if we aren't included in Matthew's nativity story, then God is not one of us. God remains at a distance, perhaps even out of reach. Or maybe those who take offense at such an idea or who have tried to keep God at a distance have placed too much emphasis on Matthew's three kings of the Orient. And in the process, have lost sight of a God who becomes human like one of us. A God who needs his diaper changed and fed where more often comes out than stays in, and spit up wiped from his chin. Let's see a royal traveler do that. A God who goes through adolescence and puberty, whose voice squeaks and changes, whose face is covered with pimples. Which wise man gets to explain the many changes going on in his body? Or perhaps a God who loves and who loses love, who has friends that are sure to break his heart and who gets mad as hell when religion becomes commodified, keeping those who need it most from being able to reach the manger into which this God was born. After all, isn't that what happens when the three kings arrive? On a few camels bearing gifts of great value? Or maybe, like Isaiah, we can imagine a Bethlehem covered in camels, each with a rider who comes in wealth or poverty, royalty or peasantry, from distant lands or right around the corner. And maybe the gifts they bring are even more precious than gold or frankincense or myrrh, at least to a baby. Gifts like blankets to keep him warm, or textiles to be made into clothes as he grows, or maybe the greatest gift of all, ourselves. That's a much more realistic birth narrative to me. Each of us welcomed to the manger just as we are. Bad habits, failures, warts and all. With simply an affinity for and commitment to the all-inclusive kingdom, this Emmanuel, God with us, came to proclaim.